Welcome to today's Committee on Regional Affairs hearing. With me today is Senator Menard and Senator Wagner, myself, Senator Olson. On today's agenda, we've got two bills, HB 314 and HB 9. We'll hear HB 314, and Representative Olson's, one of his staff come up and present the bill.
I'm still looking for...
Identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your presentation.
Good afternoon, Chairman Olson and members of the committee. I'll keep this short because you've already heard the companion to this bill, Senate Bill 156. For the record, my name is Anna Latham, staff to Representative Kurt Olson. Before you is House Bill 314, an act extending the time period for which the Alaska Railroad Corporation may lease land without reserving the right to terminate the lease and providing for an effective date. This bill extends the maximum Alaska Railroad property lease terms from 55 to 95 years. Historically, railroads have owned large parcels of land which they lease to generate revenue. As the railroad industry is cyclical, the revenue generated from property leases helped to carry railroads through economic downturns. The Alaska Railroad owns approximately 36,000 acres, 2,000 of which are currently leased. There are 260 long-term leases at this time. Out of the 36,000 acres, 38% of the land is devoted to right-of-way, 12% is used for operations, and the remaining 50% is available for lease. As a state-owned entity, the Alaska Railroad Corporation is mandated to foster economic development in communities along the rail belt, as well as statewide. An extension of lease terms for up to 95 years is in line with this directive. Longer leases encourage high-value building construction by assuring developers and financiers that the developments will retain their value for future buyers. Quality developments retain their value for a longer period of time, which is good, and have a higher resale value, which is good for the railroad, the state, and for leaseholders. I want to note that this doesn't mean the standard lease will be 95 years. It simply gives the Railroad Board of Directors the option of extending a lease for up to 95 years at their discretion. This bill has received widespread support. Included in the bill packet are letters of support from the municipality of Anchorage, the cities of Valdez, Seward, and Whittier, as well as various leaseholders and developers throughout the rail belt. This concludes my testimony for House Bill 314. Should you have any questions, I have John Cook and Jeff Kubitz from the Alaska Railroad Board of Directors on the line for questions you may have.
Any questions by members of the committee for Ms. Lee?
No, sir, Mr. Chairman.
If not, any comments, Mr. Kubitz?
This is Jim Kubitz from the Alaska Railroad Real Estate Department. We have no comments unless there are questions.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for being available today.
You're welcome.
Well, thank you very much for presenting the bill this afternoon. We'll go ahead and set the bill aside. Next, we have HB 9. Speaker Chenault, go ahead with your initial presentation. Call up if you want to, and then...
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Representative Chenault. I represent District 34 on the Kenai Peninsula. Mr. Chairman, committee members, you have before you House Bill 9. It is a continuation of a bill we passed a couple of years ago, House Bill 369, which deals with an in-state gas pipeline. Mr. Chairman, I won't go into the details. I have staff here from both my office and Representative Hawker's office that can walk you through the sectional. But, Mr. Chairman, what this bill does is it removes hurdles and roadblocks that not only AGDC, the state corporation that is moving this project forward, but also issues that law and others have seen. And it's a very complex bill. I will admit probably the most complex bill that either you or I have seen in a long time, Mr. Chairman. And, we've worked on a number of facets of it. We have tried to craft a bill that fits the concerns of numerous, not only departments, but also, in the end, continues to try to push an in-state gas pipeline project forward. So Mr. Chairman, I know time's valuable. If you would like, I have Tom Wright from my office, Irina Delbridge here can walk through a sectional, and we also have Dan Fowski from AGDC, and also we have Joe Dubler here that would be more than happy to try to answer any of the committee's questions, Mr. Chairman.
Since you're the senior person, I just want to comment on the similarities between this, since it is such a complicated bill, HB 9, how it differs or is the same as 369 we passed in 08?
This is just enabling legislation. It helps them move forward to an open season, Mr. Chairman. 369 basically set the foundation for what a project should look like, what the legislature at that time thought that an in-state gas pipeline with the restrictions that we had under the AGEA process of a half a B a day and some other restrictions. What this does is it continues down that path because we're still underneath the AGEA process, and that is the law of the land. And so what 369 asked AGDC to do is to craft, to look at a project from Prudhoe Bay to Tidewater in South Central, and look at the most economic route that would bring gas down to Tidewater. They put together a plan. It was delivered in July 7th, I believe, Mr. Chairman. I think all legislators and anyone that would have liked a copy of it or would still like a copy of it, those copies are available. And this just allows them to proceed on down the path to get to a possible open season to allow shippers and sellers to try to put this project together, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Wright. And Ms. Delbridge, you want to come on up for a second? The size of those binders is kind of
scary.
Significant.
This is the first of two.
Well, they're not the same.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Tom Wright, and as Speaker Chenault said, by the way, I'm staff to Speaker Chenault. You know, this bill has undergone a lot of transformation since it started out as House Bill 9, three-line bill that we introduced last year in anticipation of what AGDC was going to do as far as recommendations. But it sets a framework for AGDC, that's the Alaska Gas Line Development Authority, to serve as the state's gas pipeline entity. It directs AGDC specifically to continue working on the 500 MCF line described in its July 2011 project plan, linking North Slope gas to Fairbanks and the rail belt at the lowest possible cost as to Alaskans, and then to analyze where commercially feasible to build additional lines connecting other communities in Alaska to natural gas. At the same time, House Bill 9 provides AGDC the structure to consider other gas line opportunities now and in the future, and sets AGDC up to participate on Alaskans' behalf in an ALINE project, as the three producers, TransCanada, and the governor announced last week, that will be under consideration. Although lengthy, House Bill 9 really comes down to a few things. Again, it sets a framework for AGDC to be our gas pipeline entity by defining its duties and responsibilities, also to avoid redundancy in state spending and gas line work, and to maximize ANGDA's good work as a gas marketing entity. It redefines ANGDA as an equal subsidiary corporation under AHFC and gives ANGDA the tools it needs to act in this new role. It resolves outstanding issues that left alone would create uncertainty and therefore pose risks as AGDC prepares for an open season on the in-state gas pipeline. And these uncertainties include how an in-state natural gas pipeline would be regulated and whether the carrier would be able to offer contractual firm service needed to secure project financing. And under House Bill 9, AGDC would be empowered to act on behalf of Alaskans' best interest in providing natural gas to Alaskans. Calls on the state and local governments to participate in ways that will reduce tariffs that Alaskans ultimately would pay for, and, for example, waiving property taxes during the pipeline construction period only, and requiring that state and local resources like water and gravel be made available at usual rates, but they're not to be railed into any tariff that Alaskans might pay. Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure how you want to proceed. I can go over the sectional and try and make it as brief as possible, but there's 35 different sections in here, And, you know, like I say, I can roll through them if you'd like to.
As long as you get going at 5 o'clock.
I hope it doesn't take till 5 o'clock, Mr. Chairman. Okay, in Section 1, express legislative intents and findings.
He's a late boomer. He reads real slow.
Go ahead.
I can be here till 6 or 7 if you'd like, Mr. Chairman. Whatever time you want us to be done. Anyway, Section 1, findings and intent. AGDC pipeline is in the public convenience and necessity, and I can go through all these, but I think too that you have that sectional in front of you, and so we'll just, you know, kind of gloss over that somewhat, but it does, you know, kind of lay out the groundwork for what we're attempting to do in House Bill 9. Section
well,
2.
A lot of Section 1 was in 369 too, wasn't it?
Pardon me?
A lot of Section 1 was in 369.
Not all of it, no. There were portions that were derived from 369, but this is, you know, in advance of, you know, what we've done with 369 and, you know, taking that next step. So a lot of the findings are basically in that next step step range. Section 2, this adds a new section to the Alaska Housing Finance Corp statutes. And basically what it does is describes AGDC's duties and abilities as a subsidiary corporation. Under Section 2, you know, AGDC is to advance an in-state gas pipeline project as provided in the July 2011 project plan. Once construction on the line starts, to start analyzing additional pipelines, for example, you know, one of the things Representative Feige was interested in is, you know, if this is how we proceed, and again, this isn't definite because we've got the alignment out there, but, you know, right now, under the constraints we have, if we do proceed, you know, shooting off Lyons State, perhaps to Downland Creek, Glen Allen, you know, along the Richardson Highway, the Richardson Highway, if the Parks Highway is the route that, you know, finally is determined to be the route. Manage and invest a newly created pipeline fund. That bill was passed by the House. It's sitting in Senate Finance right now. And we do have three bills that have been rolled into this legislation. House Bill 189, House Bill 203, and House Bill 215. 203 is the funding mechanism that once it's created, we allocated $200 million last year to be put into another account. Once this fund's set up, that $200 million will go into that account, and about $240 million is what is needed to get AGDC through an open season. Following the open season, once precedent agreements are signed, make public for each shipper the name, capacity contracted for, and the length of contract. Develop pipelines making natural gas available to Fairbanks, South Central, and other communities at the lowest rate possible. Develop commercially reasonable rates for shippers and for public utilities and industrial customers. And disclose an executed pipeline operating agreement between AGDC and the pipeline operator to be disclosed publicly to the extent that disclosure doesn't divulge any trade secrets or proprietary information. Under Section 2, and these are the shells, by the way, under Section 2, AGDC may decide how a pipeline will be owned and operated, including joint ownership or operatorship, exercise the state's existing right-of-way of eminent domain, which they already have, but we just wanted to make it clear that they are still under the statutes that are in place for eminent domain, acquire property and interest in pipelines as needed, manage the AGDCA assets, including transfer, disposal, parts, or all of a pipeline project, provide transportation of natural gas by way of contract carriage, and issue revenue bonds limited to AGDC's backing to carry out AGDC's purpose. Section 3, this exempts ANGDA from the state procurement code when contracting for professional services only. This is conforming language to Section 20. Section 4, this provides AGDC access to information of state agencies directly related to designing, constructing, and operating an in-state gas line, natural gas pipeline, and also to protect existing confidentiality of information held by state agencies. The joint in-state gas line development team also was part of this at one time, and we are changing the name now from joint in-state gas line development team to AGDC since they've taken over that responsibility. Section 5 amends the public land in-state natural gas pipeline cooperation and access to information. This directs state agencies to cooperate and give priority to AGDC requests, and not in front of AGIA, by the way, but, you know, it does put them, you know, at the top order of the priority list. and also exempts leases from common carriage covenants in the State Right-of-Way Leasing Act. An exemption, again, from these covenants allows AGDC to operate a contract carrier. And when we get into the contract carrier, I know there's some issues among some, you know, some of the legislators that we've experienced over on the House side. I'm sure it's going to be, there's going to be some questions regarding that on this side as well. And, you know, Dan Pawlowski and Joe Dubler will be here to, you know, kind of walk you through that if you'd like.
So do you want them to answer the question about the common carrier versus the contract carrier?
And we can do that as well, Mr. Chairman, but, you know, I guess, you know, in a nutshell, you know, it's so they can, you know, offer 20, 30-year contracts. I mean, you know, have the capacity on the line sold, and it's not uncommon in other states. In fact, we've run across very few pipelines that have been common carriage. Most of them have been contract carriage. Because you know they need those commitments, you know, to pay off the, you know, to pay off the any bond that they any bond debt that they may assume.
Ms. Delridge, if you might want to say something.
If you have additional questions, I'm happy to supply.
Okay. Well, that's one of the questions that came up.
But like I say, they can walk you through that a lot better than I.
Senator Menard.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Tom, on page 5, when it talks about it incurs indebtedness, is there any limitation on the amount of indebtedness they can? Is there any limit?
We did not put any limits in here. And again, you know, I'll defer to Mr. Dubler and Mr. Pawlowski.
Okay.
You know, too. And a lot's going to depend through the chair, Senator Menard, on you know what happens during open season.
Mm-hmm.
You know what the costs are going to be. You know it's been estimated right now in the $7.5 billion range, plus or minus 30. You know they're at that stage of engineering right now. So,
and I like this bill. I think I even signed on. So if we were on a fast track, when could you? What would be the earliest that you could see the open seasoning happening?
It's anticipated. I want to say it's July 2013. Next year.
If I may, Rena Delbridge, staff to Representative Hawker. Senator Menard, through the chair, AGDC is scheduling its open season to start next year in 2013, early in the year, and they intend to hold a long open season through most of 2013, during which time they can hold negotiations with individual interested shippers, realizing this is a unique project and therefore holding a longer open season than what we might see in an open season that is needing to follow FERC's open season orders.
So you're saying July of 2013, and then you're planning on holding it longer than which is typically common in industry. But would that be then like 5 months until December? Or?
Senator Menard, through the chair, I believe they would start holding that open season offering in January of 2013.
Oh, okay.
And then they would be able to work through all of those negotiations through the course of next year. The intent right now in the project plan is to conclude the open season by December of 2013, at which point they reach a decision whether or not they have secured the shipping commitments that would be required to fully support financially development of this project going forward.
And if they don't have a security, or they haven't secured the contracts, what's the plan then? Or is that a question for Mr. Dubler?
Senator Olson, you are the chair, excuse me. Mr. Dubler can certainly expand on that. Their direction through this legislation is that they need to have a commercially feasible project to go forward.
Okay.
And so the intent of the sponsors that way is that they need to have sufficient shipping commitments on that pipeline to make a commercially viable project in order to go forward at that point.
Sure. Mr. Wright.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Section 7, this is confidentiality, and it allows AGDC to enter into confidentiality agreements as necessary to carry out its duties. And that's including with state agencies and deems confidential information related to field studies and technical data. Also calls on municipalities and state agencies to provide non-hydrocarbon natural resources and at usual and customary rates. Also calls on agencies to issue permits and leases at no cost, except for permits and leases through the State Line Pipeline Coordinator's Office. Also requires AGDC to bear the usual and customary costs, but does not allow these costs in a rate base. And again, allows that a state right-of-way lease granted to AGDC may, upon commissioner of DNR approval, be transferred to another party under the same terms and conditions as applicable to AGDC. Section 8 is the definition section, and it revises definition of AGDC, the in-state natural gas pipeline and natural gas pipeline. Section 9 is conforming, and this conforms to Section 6, you know, dealing with right-of-way leasing. The same thing is true with Section 9, Section 10, Section 11, and Section 12. It's all conforming language to match with Section 6. Section 13 is judicial review, and this bill was passed by the House. It's residing in Senate Judiciary right now, as Senate Bill or House Bill 215. And this limits judicial review of the state lease permit or other authorization decisions to Superior Court only, and prohibits the courts from granting injunctive relief. If the court's going to grant relief, it has to be in a final judgment. Claims have to be brought within 60 days of an action for which the relief is sought. Section 14 exempts information covered by an AGDC confidentiality agreement.
Before we continue on, back to 13, where you're talking about the Superior Court. Why is it limited just to the Superior Court and not any of the higher courts?
Because you still have to go through Superior Court. You know, it limits you from going, you know, it goes right to Superior Court rather than District Court.
Well, you start out at Superior Court.
Right, you start out at Superior Court.
I understand. But the Superior Court's not the final authority.
No, you still have the ability.
Supreme Court.
You know, again, they have to issue a final judgment, grant injunctive relief just to, you know, we're trying to keep this process moving. This was modeled after TAPS legislation that was adopted by the feds and also in our statutes back in 1973.
Okay, go ahead.
Where was I? Section 14. This exempts information covered by an AGDC confidentiality agreement from the State Public Records Act, and this section exempts from public records disclosure that the information allowed under Section 7 to be kept confidential. We've had to go back and forth with a lot of conforming statutes, and that's, you know, one of the reasons why the bill is so long. I think one section was 3.5 pages and only changed one line, but the section was lengthy. So Section 15 enables ANGDA to act as a gas marketer instead of a transporter. What we've done is say you're not going to be building the line, but you're going to end up being the marketing agent on behalf of a gas pipeline. Also,
I'm sorry, Senator Bernard.
I'm happy. ANGDA didn't go away. That was Harold Hines was the chair, correct, or the CEO of that, and so now you're directing AGDC to be. I'm just trying to get my mind around. They're going to be in effect. The ANGDA, they will be that board. Is that right?
Not quite through the chair, Senator Bernard. And later in the section, I'll kind of explain this too, but as it stands right now, ANGDA will be under AHFC's guidance.
Okay.
There's one single board, and again, that's conforming language that's found in the bill at a later time. The AHFC board will be the board for both ANGDA and also AGDC.
Okay.
We call it as a merger.
Yeah, like a merger.
Right.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Everybody, I've had people ask, where did they go away? Did they fall off the planet?
Well, that's
are we going to bring them back? They did a lot of good work. They got some licensing done and some.
And through the chair,
permits.
Senator Olson, Senator Bernard, ANGDA has done, some preliminary work that AGDC would find, would be able
beneficial
to use as an asset, and it would be beneficial to their operations, but. ANGDA was originally set up as a pipeline builder. Well,
right.
We've taken all those, the pipeline building
aspect of
parts
it.
And deleted those in these sections, but they are still an active entity.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things we didn't want to do, it was a voter initiative, it passed by a wide margin, was completely do away with ANGDA. Well, we saw a role for ANGDA in this without doing away with it and still, but just limited their duties somewhat.
So another question follow-up, so I totally understand this. So the board members would still remain, or you'll have new board members that'll come on to ANGDA?
Through the chair, Senator Bernard, the AHFC board will act as the
board.
ANGDA board. Yes.
Okay, I get it. Okay.
One question I have is, was this a voluntary subordination by ANGDA to come under AHFC, or was it, and you don't have to answer the question if you don't want to, but
through the chair,
if I talk to the old ANGDA board members and say, hey, Let's go out and have a little private talk here. Would they say, yeah, we said they were such good people, we decided we wouldn't subordinate ourselves to it?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, Mr. Chairman, I think you'd have to ask the ANGDA members that.
Sure.
You know, I don't want to mm-hmm. talk on their behalf. I have my guesses where they'd be if you asked them. But the other thing was we had an audit done not too long ago that prescribed simply doing away with ANGDA.
Okay. And you're not doing that.
And that's something that we, you know, we thought a lot about and decided that, you know, even though the audit said that, we still have some uses for them. Mm-hmm. And, again, they still have some assets that would be valuable to AGDC.
Don't they have privileges as well as that might be useful to the pipeline?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
Then one more question on that same topic. Do they still maintain their same office? Are you going to keep that same office downtown Anchorage?
Through the chair, Senator Bernard, I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a Mr. Dubler, Mr. Falsky question.
They were appointed under Governor Palin, correct? The ANGDA board, the current, the one that's...
that was 2002.
If I may, Senator Menard, through the chair, the ANGDA board members, some have cycled through different appointment levels, and of course ANGDA was created by the voter initiative in 2002.
Mm-hmm.
One member of the board, I believe, was a sponsor of the initiative that created ANGDA and is still on that board.
Okay.
I don't believe that the board is at fully functioning numbers at the moment due to the lack of appointments recently. However, the sponsors, again, believe that ANGDA serves a very critical purpose mm-hmm. in a gas line discussion going forward. If ANGDA is not able to serve as this marketing arm, another subsidiary corporation will have to be created likely to do that.
Okay.
ANGDA has, in some parts, already taken on some of those functions to try and work with local utilities in South Central Alaska in the rail belt to help build cooperatives to perhaps arrange for space on an AGS spur line. This is a logical continuation of some of the work that they have been involved with, and it also keeps intact all of the incredible work that ANGDA has done studying how propane, for example, might be distributed throughout rural Alaska on barges. ANGDA's work, it's good work, stays with ANGDA.
Okay.
Mr. Wright, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Section 16 clarifies ANGDA's role as a gas marketer. Again, there's a lot of conforming language in here, you know, just to we had to change statute to prescribe that they are going to be a marketer and not a builder. Section 17 is royalty gas and allows ANGDA, along with the DNR commissioner, to pledge royalty, state royalty gas for contracts entered into by ANGDA. It directs the commissioner to treat a pledge under this section as a disposal of gas other than by sale or exchange. That's whatever gas is not committed already, state royalty gas is not already committed. Section 18, it states that the HFC Board of Directors will serve as the ANGDA Board of Directors. Section 19, again, is conforming, and it conforms to Section 18. It allows the board members per diem and travel expenses, you know, while they're mm-hmm. doing ANGDA business. Section 20 includes legal counsel and the services ANGDA may contract for and exempts procurement of contracted services from the state procurement code. Section 21 removes involvement with a project from the circumstances regarding disclosure. Again, you know, we had to make conforming language where ANGDA is a marketer, not a pipeline builder. Section 22 is expand ANGDA's existing confidential records authority to include information in a confidential agreement between ANGDA and AGDC. Section 23, again conforming, removes ANGDA's authority to exercise eminent domain as ANGDA serves as a marketing arm and not a pipeline builder. Section 24 conforms to Section 18, defining ANGDA's board as HFC's board. Sections 25 through 29 implement a new regulatory chapter which is applicable to an in-state natural gas pipeline authorized to provide contract transportation. We've done, and I should say Ms. Delbridge, Stuart Goring, RCA, who's been involved in this to a degree, and Tina Grovier, who's AGDC's counsel, you know, on regulatory matters, put a lot of time and effort into this from where we originally started. Because since this is a contract carrier, there really are no provisions within state statute to provide for that. It doesn't fall under the Public Utilities Act, nor does it fall under the Pipeline Act, except, you know, for a very limited amount.
Not.
No, not at all, I've been told. Okay. What I'd like to do on these sections here is we do have a complete analysis of this section. It's and the next two pages following the last, or the next, there's two pages following the last page that probably give more description, you know, as to what we're doing as far as RCA oversight. And, you know, I can go through these really quick, but Section 25, 26, 27, 28, and 29 all pertain to RCA regulation. And we can go more into depth of that. In fact, I would ask Ms. Delbridge to probably, if you want more of an explanation, to provide that for you. And I can get into each section, but, you know, again, we'll probably be spending a little bit of time on that anyway. Section 30 is the property tax exemption only during construction. It exempts an AGDC project from the state and local property taxes during that construction period. Section 31 repeals seven statutes, and most of these pertain to either the joint in-state gas line development team, or it pertains to ANGDA, those statutes that are no longer necessary, and they're listed here, you know, under the sectional analysis. Section 32 repeals Section 1 of the 2002 ballot measure. Number 3, that was the ANGDA measure, the findings of which are no longer necessary with ANGDA's revised authority. Section 33, Mr. Chairman, is transition language expressing the legislative intent that existing right-of-way leases between AGDC and DNR are to be amended to reflect the exemption from common carriage covenants, which are contained in Section 6 of House Bill 9. The Constitution bars the legislature from passing laws that apply retroactively to contracts in place. Section 34 revises instruction, and Section 35 sets an immediate effective date. Well, that's a quick overview of the sectional, probably as quick as I could go through it. And, you know, I'm sure there's a lot more information that you'd like to glean from that, and we'll be happy to answer any questions at this time.
The only question I have is Section 28. We've got the exemption that's there. Can you just clear that up for me so I understand what it's exempting? Mm-hmm. I understand the common carriers exempting, but what are these? What are they not subject to, I guess is my question.
Chairman Olson, if I may,
sure.
That is part of this regulatory package, sections 25 through 29.
Okay.
Because this line is would be, with House Bill 9, authorized by law to operate as a contract carrier instead of a common carrier,
mm-hmm.
The regulation of this line would fall under this new chapter, 4208.
Okay.
If we direct that this line will be regulated under 4208, we need to specifically exempt it from potential regulation as either a public utility under 4205 or as a Common Carrier Pipeline Act pipeline under 4206.
And is there a simple answer to the question? If the question is, how does that benefit the state?
What that does, creating this new regulatory chapter,
mm-hmm.
Makes a clear regulatory process going forward. With quite limited Regulatory Commission of Alaska involvement. Because this is a contract carrier where two parties are expected to come together and form a contract, we've directed that the RCA would judge those just and reasonable if they are in fact done in a fair transaction without duress or fraud or something
which
like that.
Which is the two parties, right?
Exactly.
Okay.
What this section does not do is provide for traditional cost-based regulation. Like what the RCA would normally do.
Mm-hmm.
Public utilities are certainly affected by that. Their ratepayers are always protected in that the public utilities will have to go through a Regulatory Commission of Alaska process in order to be able to recoup their expenses in the rates charged to customers.
Okay. But it looks, from what I see, the RCA is almost taken out of it because as long as the two parties agree, that there's nothing that the RCA can do. Is that correct?
That is generally correct. There are a few backstops. For
fraud and whatever else that's out there.
Some additional ones down the road.
Mm-hmm.
What happens under this is that the precedent agreements that are negotiated would go to the RCA for approval. And the RCA would look at those, as you said, fairly briefly and make sure that they are, in fact, done at arm's length.
Mm-hmm.
And if they are, they would be able to approve those.
Sure.
Once then, that provides this regulatory certainty, if you will, that the people that are buying gas and the utilities are going to be able to recover those rates. And that enables AGDC to continue forward with those contracts, firming those up, resolving any outstanding conditions, and generating the firm transportation commitments that let you start construction and get financing. We've tried to build in some backstops into this chapter 4208 that provides for the public welfare, I guess you could say.
Sure.
Although we've asked the RCA to not be involved in this traditional cost-based regulation, we've said if there ever is some, we've said that we realize there are disputes that happen even among people that have a contract together,
mm-hmm.
and that if those disputes occur and they involve a public utility and it threatens the public health and safety and welfare because of the inability for parties to resolve this conflict, the RCA can step in. If it's June and this conflict means you're not going to have gas at your electric utility come November, the RCA is empowered to step into this and to take things into their control. We've also created a partial certificate of public convenience and necessity that the RCA would need to go ahead and issue for the carrier of this pipeline. It's very limited compared to your traditional certificate of public convenience and necessity.
Federal certificate, isn't it?
No, the RCA issues state certificates as well. Both the federal and the state have their processes for that.
Okay.
It's generally a finding of whether or not the applicant is fit, willing, and able to provide the service that they're wanting to provide,
mm-hmm.
And also whether or not the service is in fact itself in the public's interest and in the convenience and necessity.
Okay.
We've structured this because AGDC is operating on the state's behalf with a mandate to provide gas at the lowest possible rates to Alaskans. We have also built into the bill the de facto finding that this line would be in the public's interest and convenience and necessity. So that part of that CPCN finding is considered done. We've also made the de facto findings through the regulatory section that an application brought by AGDC, they are willing and they are able to provide this service. They're willing to because they're statutorily required to be providing gas service to Alaskans.
Sure.
And they're able to because the state has provided for its financial backing to go forward and do so.
Okay. And at least as I look at this section right here, you're almost making it so that why are you so hard over for a contract carrier versus a common carrier? Where do I see the savings, I guess, is my real question. To the end consumer.
But Senator Olson, generally speaking, gas pipelines throughout the lower 48 are contract carriers, whereas oil pipelines are generally common carriers. A contract carrier and a gas line work together that way in the sense that the gas has to go straight from the person producing the gas, mm-hmm. through a line straight to the end user. There's no big oil tank storages in some hub that you then disperse the gas product from. And so that means that you need to have firm service.
Mm-hmm.
You can't have interruptible service. A common carriage line essentially says that it's a common service offered for the common public so that anybody that wants in at any time, anybody that already has gas going through, has to move over their shipments and make room. But that means your power plant may not get its gas, mm-hmm. if someone else suddenly has a contract that they want to feed into this line.
Okay.
The contract carriage lines are important with the natural gas pipeline also from that financing point of view, because that firm commitment to transfer that gas with uninterruptible service over a period of time, 10, 15, 20 years, is what underpins the financing of the pipeline.
It's my understanding, though, that aren't you planning on exporting LNG to whatever market might be out there with at least some of the storage areas that are being expanded down in Cook Inlet? Is that not true?
Chairman Olson, the AGDC plan in their project plan acknowledges that for about half the capacity of this line, mm-hmm. they will require a large industrial anchor. One possibility for a large industrial anchor is continued LNG exports out of South Central Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
That's not been decided, and there is no LNG component to this pipeline at this moment. The line actually in the project plan terminates where it hooks into the South Central distribution grid just south of Big Lake.
Sure.
The aligned project that you've heard the governor and the companies in TransCanada talk about doing would involve an LNG export component. The LNG facility, I believe, likewise, would have to have a very firm commitment of the amount of gas coming to it every single day in order to supply whatever contracts it has in a final LNG product that's going out regularly.
But to me, it sounds like if you had a common carrier, you'd be able to accommodate a lot easier than you would if you had a contract carrier. Is that not correct?
Chairman Olson, I believe the problem is that the LNG train, the facility that liquefies the gas, is going to be probably built to size, and you're only going to ship as much gas down that line, aside from what you have for in-state use, as what you would be able to feed into that train and process. Otherwise, it's space, money, facility that's not being used and therefore is very costly and expensive.
Okay.
And therefore, they will need to have a very direct link between, again, the people shipping the gas and the facility using it, so also they can keep those contractual shipments going out on tanker as well.
Okay. Mr. Wright, continue, please.
That concludes our sectional analysis of the bill. Like I said, Mr. Dubler and Mr. Fowski are here, and I'm sure you'll have plenty of questions for them, and we'll be happy to answer anything, you know, if you have any questions in the meantime or, you know, between committee hearings, just let us know, and we'll be more than happy to help answer. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yep.
Thank you.
Daniel, jump into the lion's den. Identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your question.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Dan Fowski. I am CEO of Alaska Housing Finance and also president of Alaska Gasline Development Corp. And with me, go ahead,
John. And for the record, Joe Dubler, I'm the vice president and chief financial officer of AGDC.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, I know Joe's got some prepared statements. I'd just like to help respond a little bit to some of what I've heard. In reference to ANGDA, I think they're down to like one employee is what's remaining. And if in the eventuality this bill passes and we roll ANGDA into our operation, we would certainly house them, or that facility, within the offices that we've rented in Midtown. We recently moved into some offices right across the street from, right across the hall from the Petroleum Club. We got a deal on a facility, have about 27 people in there currently, most of whom are contract employees. And everyone that's been hired to date is totally project related. If this project isn't there, they're not there. So there's no bureaucracy that's been created in terms of ongoing. So the issue on contract versus common, I think, and it also ties into the RCA question that we started out with earlier. If, in fact, we're limited to 500 million feet of gas a day, which is small in comparison to what most pipelines do. Alaska is a small market. There's one of the difficulties we've had for years as Alaskans in financing a pipeline is there simply aren't enough of us. Our total state population is a good-sized county in the rest of the country, and when you start putting these mega projects together, there's millions of people and billions of feet of gas that go through utilities and factories and all kinds of facilities. The situation here is one where if we're going to enter into long-term shipping contracts, and for instance, Chugach or MLNP or NSTAR or the others are going to sign up, those are 10, 15, 20-year contracts. It ties into their ability to finance, and it ties into our ability to finance. This project will be financed with revenue bonds. And so there's two other layers of security that are then represented for Alaskan citizens, and one is rating agencies on their utility divisions. They will take a long, hard look at the financing and the strategies being employed and the contracts in place to rate the bonds. And then after that, you have the investor scrutiny of the people that you're going to be asking to buy the bonds. So the idea when you got into unlimited bonding authority, the bonds and debt of this corporation are the bonds and debt of this corporation, not of the state, and they're not the debt of Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. We were very clear to lay that out. It's not dissimilar when we formed Northern Tobacco Securitization Corporation a number of years ago on the windfalls that were paid to each state by the 50 attorney generals. If you may might remember this, but HFC was called upon to securitize and capitalize that that investment. We sold bonds, securitized bonds behind it, and sold about $300 million in bonds. It was solely the indebtedness of the Northern Tobacco Securitization Corporation, which is also a subsidiary of the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. This transaction would be similar. It would be based on the merits of the business transaction taking place and the investors and others that would be involved. The plan as laid out required a 70-30 debt equity ratio that we we're looking at, because you can issue debt cheaper than you can finance equity because of the guaranteed rate of return on most of these projects, which runs between 12% and 14%. You don't want a big player to come in and demand that type of return on all their equity when you could be out selling much cheaper debt. So you do a blended rate, and in this case it's 70-30, which helps drive the tariff down. Our intention was always to follow the mandates of HB 369, which would deliver gas at the lowest possible cost, which then meant the way we'd structure the financing to try and keep those tariffs down. And we always anticipated some type of state equity participation or ownership, not operation, but ownership of the line for that very same reason. So I think, and Joe, if you want to, I was trying to catch you, make sure I caught some of the questions that were asked. The other thing about with the RCA, the original theory that we had going in was if the state's going to be a part owner, and the RCA is a wonderful institution, this was no way in any way meant in some type of, but if the state's going to own it, and if there's anything Joe and I have done a lot of, it's sell bonds and work deals together, you always have to create a clear path between the investor and his investment, meaning we could say, well, the legislature's passed a bill and the governor signed it, they understand that, and they say, well, Dan, we know you and we know Joe and we know the agency and the people you're doing, but who are these RCA people out here? And how is it that they're between me and my investment in the fact that you want me to buy and purchase 20-year bonds, but for some reason there's another group out here that has the ability to step in and alter those cash flows or the ability for me to receive my payments. And the fact, the theory that we were operating on was not of one to endanger Alaskan citizens, because Alaskan citizens would still have access through their own utility companies in dealing with the RCA, but it was to not impinge on the ability to issue debt. You could issue the bonds probably, but you'd pay a premium for them because they'd say, well, you've added a level of risk here that is unusual in most of these transactions. And then the basic theory too is if you're going to own the line, why would you regulate yourself and create another hurdle to go over? So it was solely intended. Now, I believe the work that's been done by the people that Mr. Wright mentioned is superior. I think what's now included in the bill it will ease most people's mind in terms to make sure that this isn't a renegade operation going off selling bonds nilly-willy and no one's going to pay any attention to them, because that simply,
Mr. Chairman,
will not happen.
May I ask to be excused? I have to interview four attorneys now for a position.
Lucky you.
Yeah.
We won't be going very much longer.
I do a problem.
I'm assuming you're going to leave a staffer here to go ahead and give you the information.
Okay. One of our primary goals when we took on this project was to the benchmark that we always established was you must be able to beat the price of imported LNG, or this is truly a fool's errand. There's no sense going any further. And we believe that we've done that at a substantial rate up to date, delivering gas into the Anchorage market at about $9.63 an MCF, plus or minus 30%, and into Fairbanks at $10.45, plus or minus 30%. We are currently, on that, Fairbanks is currently paying $23.33 for that same amount of BTUs. If you've seen, I know there were some classes held and there's been presentations on the stage-gated approach using the IPA model on how to manage mega projects. There's FEL 1, 2, 3 that we're operating under. We have recently completed FEL 1. We are now moving into FEL 2. And one of the beauties of that is that at any time along the way, if you determine that this project no longer is feasible, you stop and you report back to the legislature and others and say, look, this thing just simply isn't going to work, and these are the reasons why.
Remind me what the imported LNG gas rates are.
We estimate right now, and based on the local enterprises that are currently meeting with RCA to determine, and Joe, I need some between 14 and 16 in MCF in 2000, well, now $12. We've been told recently that the local utilities are having trouble getting contracts beyond 2 years. Now, there is excitement about potential gas in the inlet. That remains to be seen, and I know that work is ongoing. But the current status is one where long-term contracts are simply not being made available to the utilities buying that gas.
Well, at least the quick off-the-top calculations, if LNG is selling it at $14 per MCF and you've got $10.45 plus or minus 30%, you're up around $14 right there.
Well, Mr. Chairman, that is true, but as we proceed on into FEL 3 and sanctioning, we find it to be a plus or minus 10%. So the numbers are going to be more fine-tuned, and I know, Joe, you want to add to this. So,
Mr. Chairman, if you might, for the record, Joe Duba, the $10.45 is delivered in Fairbanks.
Right.
So the $14 to $16 is delivered to Cook Inlet, Nikiski, which you'd then have to get to Fairbanks and distribute. The $10.45 is delivered to the burner tip. It includes a $2 distribution. Sorry. They blow your eardrum. It includes a $2 distribution charge for the Fairbanks for the area, and also a $2 net back on the North Slope. So for those numbers aren't really comparable. You'd compare the 14 to 16 to our $8 number in Cook Inlet, and that plus or minus 30 gets you a little over $10. So we're looking right now, and that brings back to the question I believe it was Senator Menard had about an open season failure. To the extent an open season failure, we didn't get enough commitments from shippers and or producers to fill the line, we would abandon the project, as Dan said. That's the end of FEL or front end loading stage two, and at that point we would abandon the project because it wouldn't make economic sense clearly, or we would have customers, and without customers you don't have a product. So and abandoning that line would mean we're importing LNGs, and that's what the market would be telling us. So. She's not here, but we answer her question.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, I want to clear up one point that I've heard some people mention, and there's some confusion as to the fact the total funding for this project, as we've stated for about a year and a half now, is $400 million that the state would put up, and there's bills moving out there. I know last year the legislature reserved $200 million. There's currently $21 million in the, I believe it's the governor's capital budget, to fund this project. We've received $28.2 million, I think, last year. At the end of the day, it all adds up to $400 million.
Sure.
And that's the expenditure that the state will make to get itself through an open season, hopefully a successful open season, and then with contractors bidding in and pipeline companies and others coming in to do the project. The project would be funded with revenue bonds. So it's not a $7.5 billion outlay of state capital. It's $400 million to get you to a position. When we first took this project on, we met with every pipeline company imaginable, and we were told, we knew that's what they were going to say, but we were told, you folks are nowhere near ready for even to bid a project. Once you get there, we would be interested. This is also money that companies aren't going to spend. They're not going to come up and spend that kind of money to determine if we have a viable project or not. So what it's really doing is a preparation, and predominantly engineering and permitting and all the stuff that we're doing, to get you to a position
Senator Wagner has a question.
Yes, sir.
Okay, at the time you have your open season, in the open season, if you have a successful open season, at that time you can make the decision whether to sell revenue bonds or if you got another investor, though, to come along, take over the project as an independent pipeline operator or an independent LNG manufacturer, whatever. There's room in there for either or. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Wagner, absolutely. We have several options available to us. We're not fixated on anyone.
I just wanted to make sure everybody knew that you weren't just saying we're going to do this and we're proceeding right through the process.
Senator, I'm glad you asked the question because that's absolutely correct. Please.
Joe Dubler, for the record, through the chairman, Senator Wagner, one of the things in House Bill 9 does give AGDC the power to determine the appropriate ownership and bonding for this project. So.
Before we continue on, I just want to make sure you know I got commitments that I was going to be out here by 5 o'clock. So, any closing comments that you want?
If I may, Mr. Chairman, we've completed a great deal of work. The draft EIS is now in the Corps of Engineers' capable hands. We anticipate that work will be completed by May or June. Mm-hmm. We've already had the transfer of the state right away. The Alaska Housing Finance Corporation with HB9 would do a further transfer of that to the AGDC.
Okay.
The federal government has notified us that they are prepared and have enough information to issue the federal right away. What I'm proud of is the fact the state's never been this far in reference to the work. We estimate 2,200 and counting permits on this entire project. So,
how many do you have now?
Completed?
Nothing.
Mr. Chairman, not many. We're still going through the regulatory and land, right?
But we have great working relationships with some of the native corps along the line, Minto to name food. We put people to work. 737 mile long pipeline delivers a lot of gas to the state.
Sure.
And
any further questions, Senator Wagner?
Not right now.
Okay. With that, we're going to adjourn this meeting. Next meeting is going to be on Tuesday, hopefully at 3:30.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
This meeting is adjourned.